Hey, I'm Antonio Grisefo, and this is the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast, episode 17. Are you calling me a mook? Part 2. Now, when last we left our hero, well, he's really more of an anti-hero. He's quite a disagreeable chap. I can understand where a lot of people may not have empathy for the Antonio character in many of my stories, who has little or nothing to do with me because I'm basically a nice guy and he's kind of a jerk. But anyway, so when we left him last time, he was in the job interview and he was begging really hard for that job. He was debating whether or not he was going to explode and storm out the door or like beat the guy up. So I don't know. If you want to lay a bet, now's the time. And here we go. Brooklyn Monk in Asia Podcast, episode 17. Are you calling me a mook? Part 2. Can you show me on your schedule where your classes are? You mean the classes I have on Saturday and Sunday? Yes, answered Mr. Zhang, obviously annoyed. The schedule had the 7 days of the week on it, and all the days were blank except Saturday and Sunday, which contained my classes. Did he actually expect me to point at the classes on the schedule? Was he testing my obedience or my ability to read a schedule? Either way, I decided to just take a zero on this assignment. Zhang looked perturbed, almost angry. Finally, he lost patience and pointed at the schedule block himself. Your classes are here, he said like he was talking to Forrest Gump. Yes, I see that, I told him. It is very important the teacher can read the schedule accurately, said Mr. Zhang, sounding like someone's mother, if someone's mother was a complete tool. Yes, it is. So they will know when their classes are, continued Zhang, beating a dead horse. So true, I agreed. And so they can have the correct books. I get it, I said, thinking, this horse isn't just dead, it's decomposing. Please look at your schedule and tell me what time your course begins. I paused. I was starting to shake. I hate being talked down to. I hate being abused. I saw this as abuse. But remembering how much I hated not having money for food or rent, I answered, 8 o'clock. Yes, and what is the class number? F-1-5, I said, reading the information off the sheet. I couldn't believe he was making me answer these questions. And which book is required for class number F-1-5? Learn English Intermediate, I read aloud. Could you please produce that book? There were three identical white bags of books on his desk. I assumed that each of these bags corresponded to one of my courses. They were not labeled in any way, so I grabbed the bag nearest me and began to look inside. That is not Learn English Intermediate, he chastised. Sorry, I was just checking the title. I put down the bag and took the second one. That is also incorrect. I have to guess it's this one, I said, picking up the third bag. I opened it and found about four books, a DVD, and a CD. Which page must you teach on Saturday? He asked. It's the first day of school, I said. I'll be teaching page 1. You must check the schedule. I checked the schedule. Guess what? It said, teach page 1. Now open your book to page 1. Can you find page 1? That was where I snapped. Hey, I am 43 years old. You were talking to me like I'm 2. And second of all, I have an advanced degree in teaching and I have 13 years of experience. You're talking down to me and I don't like it. I'm sorry. I am the quality manager and it's my job to make sure the teachers understand. I was just helping you. We looked at each other across that desk. It was a prison moment and I knew it. If I didn't stick a shank in his eye now, I'd be his bitch for the rest of the brief time I remained in his employ. Then I remembered the previous week, when I had no money at all. I just nodded. Nothing happened for a long time. Apparently Zhang was set on following his procedure step by step, but this little detour had thrown him for a complete loop, shorting out his programming. I did not mean to insult you, he said. May I show you the next thing? Yes, please, I said. The schedule tells you which page to stop teaching on. This is why I often don't bother to have altercations in Asia. They do nothing. We had just experienced a bunch of unpleasantness between us, but Zhang hadn't learned anything from it. He picked right up where he'd left off, and in the same step-by-step, condescending tone, nothing changed. I could have saved us the confrontation by just accepting that this is how Zhang does things. "Can you tell me which page to stop teaching on?" he asked. I was ready to explode. The schedule clearly said pages 1 through 3. He went through every feature of that book, every lesson, every step. It was tedious. It was very insulting. Most of it just suggested that I didn't know how to use books. Other parts were insulting, suggesting that I didn't know how to teach. There will be new words in every chapter. The children will not know every word. So, each chapter have a list of the new word. We call this list vocabulary. You should write some notes. Oh, when I was in the army, they sometimes put you through a meeting like this to test your reactions. Guys who didn't flip out would generally be considered well-suited for submarine service if their intelligence was really high, because it meant they were very smart and calm. But sometimes people are able to sit through this kind of torture because they're freaking retarded. Those guys were suitable to be tunnel rats. I knew I wasn't suitable to be either a submariner or a tunnel rat, or the teaching job that Zhang was preparing me for. I was wondering if I was suitable for anything anymore. Some of the resin are marked listening. These resin require a CD. I tried to get excited about all this great learning this man was imparting on me. Wow, that is so different from the other 26 semesters of school that I've taught. Our books had sections marked listening, but those were lessons requiring a bowling ball, a sack of flour, and a gallon of gasoline. You telling me I'll need a CD for the listening section? Man, that is so new. I don't know if I can keep up with all of this. Yes, that is why we conduct this quality assurance training, explained Zhang. Now, many of our teachers are intelligent, he continued, almost not missing a beat. But some do not know how to operate a CD player. I was about to ask, why do you hire these people? If the average person you hire needs this type of step-by-step introduction to both teaching and how to read a textbook, maybe you should review your hiring procedures. Now watch closely, cautioned Zhang. To open the CD player, you must use your finger to press down on this button. CD player popped open and I almost ran out the door. Please remove the CD from the case and place it in the CD player. I intentionally fumbled with the CD case. Sorry, I don't know how to open it, I said, handing it to him. I thought I'd won a small victory, but he looked vindicated. Follow me closely. You open the CD case like this. Then you place the CD in the player. Then you press play button if you wanted to pray. He pressed play, but nothing happened. You have to turn on the power, I told him. Yes, do not forget to turn on the power, he warned me. And I was glad he had, or I would have forgotten to turn on the power. In fact, I didn't even know that the CD player had a power button. When I told him, you have to press the power button, I was just shooting arrows in the dark. I had no idea how this or any other CD player operated, because I was a freaking moron. On the CD, there's a song. Some of the words the children would not know. The vocabulary? I asked. Yes, the vocabulary. He seemed unimpressed. Before you sing the song with the student, you should pre-teach those words. Sing? Who said I was going to sing? There was a song in the book, okay? And I was planning to use it in my lesson, but I had no intention of singing. And when they do the song, some teacher tell the students to listen for specific words. Yeah, I know, this is teaching 101. I absolutely couldn't believe this. I mean, if someone didn't already know this, they shouldn't have been hired. And if they didn't know it, they weren't going to absorb it during this lengthy and horrible meeting. They sometimes create the team within the classroom and assign points for correct answer and incorrect answer. That's called a game, you jatrool. I didn't say that to him, but I was thinking it. There was a section in the book called dialogues. Dialogue are like conversations, explained Zhang. You will need to have 2 students to do this talking together. When we have 2 students, we call a pair. Yes, I know what a dialogue is. Are you calling me a mook, I wanted to ask? Sometimes you will not have an even number of students, so you cannot make pairs. For example, if you have 19 students, how many pairs can you make? Are you serious? I asked. I really asked it this time. Are you serious? Trying to decide if I should quietly walk out or rip into him first. Yes, I am serious. Sometimes you would not have an even number of students. He didn't deviate 1 millimeter from his script. He just plowed on like a good little robot. If you have 19 students, how many paths can you make? 9, I said. Aha! But what about the extra student? Obviously, in the 13 years I've been teaching, I've been faced with the insurmountable problem of having an odd number of students, and somehow, I survived. When the meeting first started, I wanted to quit. Now I just wanted to die. I was fast-forwarding ahead 20 years. Am I still going to be sitting in meetings like this when I'm 63? Still working at language centers, still taking directions from people like Zhang, except it'll be even more ludicrous, because by then I'll have 40-some-odd years of teaching experience, and I'll be like 30 years older than him instead of 10. I never catch a break. I don't know how other people feel about their jobs, but when I'm forced to do some horrible job like this, I feel like I'm prostituting myself. Teaching English in a non-academic setting is the intellectual equivalent of working in a sweatshop. I kept having visions of Les Miserables. Cosette's mother, Fantine, had to work as a prostitute to support her daughter, and when Jean Valjean finally came to save her, it was too late. She was so racked with VD that she just lay there, coughing and drifting out of fevered hallucinations. The last words she heard before she died were Jean Valjean promising to care for Cosette till the end of his days. Your Cosette shall live within my teaching. Where was my Jean Valjean? When was the right TV or movie producer or book publisher going to come along and rescue me from having to sing the Happy Neighbor phrasal verb song? Happy neighbors go in the house. Happy neighbors pick up the phone. Happy neighbors sit down. Happy neighbors stand up. These are the phrasal verbs. I had originally planned to stay in the office and do my actual lesson prep, but when the meeting was over, I was so ready to get out of there, I just bolted for the door. I called Vegas as soon as I got home. Hello, Vegas? I need the odds on Antonio Lasting at his new job. They had it at 75-1 against me turning up for my first day of work on Saturday. I was originally thinking of writing a book of humor about the life and trials of a down-and-out author trying to make it in Ho Chi Minh City, but my life seems more depressing than funny. I thought about going back into motivational speaking. That pays pretty well, but telling people a story like that one just puts them over the edge. In fact, my lawyer has already warned me that I'm setting myself up for a liability lawsuit if someone commits suicide after listening to one of my podcasts. You know, some guy on the fence, I don't know, he lost his job, his girlfriend left him, his dog died, or whatever else happens to you in a country music song. He's faced with all those problems, flips on my podcast, and at the end of it he goes, you know, those razor blades do look pretty good. Once again, I'm plagued by the same central problem in making money off my writing. What category does it go in? Motivation? They could make a category called demotivation. But as the readers kill themselves, the market segment would get smaller and smaller. Plus, no repeat business. Travel? Who would want to travel after hearing my stories? Anti-travel. But I can't find any tour companies that are willing to buy advertising on my podcast. I wonder why. Then it hit me. Cautionary tales. This could be a warning story for kids who don't want to do their math homework, or adults who can't bear to get out of bed and go back to the grind the next day. The moral of every one of my stories could be, and this is what could happen to you if you take too many chances with your life. Back in the old neighborhood, my Uncle Carluke was a gambling addict. When I was 7 and had my graduation from Sunday school to catechism, a lot of the relatives gave me envelopes with $5 inside. Uncle Carluke asked if he could borrow the money and put it on a horse for me. Hey, kid, it's an investment, he told me. You got a bunch of envelopes with $5 in them. But you put that on the right horse, a long shot, and he crosses the line, bada boom, bada bing. You got thousands of dollars. Uncle Carluke had a point. Thousands of dollars was much better than envelopes full of $5. But for him, it wasn't just a gambling strategy. It was a life philosophy. Saps and morons, that's what you got in this world. Hey, kid, take it from me. When someone comes to you and says, I got some honest work for you, you know what they mean? They mean they got a crap job with low pay. That's honest work. These other mamelukes that go to work every day at jobs they hate, for what? To make a few extra potatoes? But me, I don't need no job. I got a system. Listen to me, kid. You're young. You got your life ahead of you. Don't make the same mistakes as everybody else. Get yourself a good racket. Now me, I got the ponies. They keep me flush, and I don't gotta go to work for nobody. Uncle Carl Luke really knew how to sell a racket, and he almost had me convinced until something occurred to me. Uncle Carl Luke, if you're doing so well, why do you have to borrow church money off a 7-year-old? Hey, I put the money on a horse, I did my part, but then, if that horse don't do what that horse is supposed to do, is that my fault? He followed this explanation with his signature phrase, I never catch a break. And he walked away. Actually, he ran away. The Irish also used our church, and there were too many cops around for Uncle Carl Luke's liking. My Uncle Carl Luke, the eternal gambler and loser, inspired me to get a racket instead of a job. But I chose riding over racehorses. In the end, however, all rackets end the same way. They end with me saying, I never catch a break. That's it for this episode of the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast. If you like the Brooklyn Monk and want to help me catch a break, order a copy of my book, Warrior Odyssey, from my website, speakingadventure.com. You know what goes great with my book? My DVD, Martial Arts Odyssey Volume 1. You can get that at speakingadventure.com. Subscribing to the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast is free. So reach over and press that button marked subscribe. And if you need me to send Mr. Zhang to your house and teach you how to press the button, I could. Do you know anyone who doesn't love their job, dreams of doing something different, or traveling around the world? Then send them the link for the Brooklyn Monk in Asia podcast. It costs you nothing, and it'll brighten their day. Speaking of free, you can also watch my videos on my YouTube channel, Brooklyn Monk 1. You can follow me on Twitter, Brooklyn Monk. You can go on my website, speakingadventure.com, and sign up for my free newsletter, and read my blog, see my photos, buy my books or my DVDs, and most important, you can donate to the Keep Antonio Writing and Filming Fund. I actually think I may change the name of that to the Keep Antonio Out of the Classroom Fund. But anyway, for now, it's the Keep Antonio Writing and Filming Fund. My Uncle Carl Luke may have been a degenerate gambler, but he wasn't boring. You never knew which part of his body would be broken by debt collectors next. He wasn't a conformist either. He paid the price, but he was his own man. This week, I want you to keep one piece of advice in the back of your mind. Don't be what anyone else wants you to be. Be what you want you to be. Be a pirate. Be a playwright. Be a celebrity chef. Be an exceptional mom or dad. And do it your way. Be an individual. I'm an individual. I'm the Brooklyn Monk in Asia, reminding you to go out and do something stupid today.